Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Hello, everyone. Happy July 1st. This is Danny Nezvedrani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM and your host for this Tuesday's Speak Up. Before we start today's episode, I just want to acknowledge that we are on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial, a time before memory, and I am so very grateful to be able to be here speaking with all of you and sharing all of these talk segments that we've got for the hour. So thank you so much for listening. Before we get into the talk portion of this Tuesday's Speak Up, I've got a track from Vancouver band Houseplants. They're going to be performing this Saturday at Katsalano. So I was thinking, what better time to play them other than right now, and maybe, you know, next week and the week after that, but especially right now. So coming up first and next, we've got Too Close to the Sun by Houseplants, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Speak Up. Hope you enjoy.
You'll never see me falter. You'll never see
We are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is Danny Nezvedarani, your host for this Tuesday. And that track was Too Close to the Sun by the Houseplants, a local Vancouver band who will be at Katsalano this Saturday. So make sure to check them out if you have the time. And coming up, we have some talk, some speaking on this episode of Speak Up. This is a new story that comes out of Nanaimo, BC, from fellow LJI journalist Lauren McKenzie with CHLY. This piece is about the city of Nanaimo looking into banning the sale of invasive plants. And I think this is a pretty interesting piece just because I think invasive plants are something that, at least for me personally, I don't think I ever really considered the impact that they have until quite recently. You know, because things like blackberries are invasive, and I love blackberries, but obviously there are concerns when it comes to the impacts that invasive species such as blackberries can have on local ecosystems. So yeah, it's an interesting point of discussion, and I hope you all find it interesting as well. This piece is called City of Nanaimo to Look at Banning the Sale of Invasive Plants by Lauren McKenzie from CHLY. Hope you enjoy.
This is a CHLY News Update. As invasive species cause harm to native ecosystems around the world, on a local level, the city of Nanaimo is looking at banning the sale and distribution of certain invasive species. At a Governance and Priorities Committee meeting on Monday, June 23rd, recommendations were made that City Council direct staff to draft a bylaw prohibiting the sale and distribution within city limits of certain species identified by the Invasive Plant Council of BC. This comes as a staff report found that several invasive plants, such as Scotch broom, Daphne, English ivy, and Himalayan blackberry grow rapidly in the city, impacting native ecosystems. Hunter Jarrett, a local ecological restoration consultant, spoke with CHY about the importance of curbing the spread of invasive species in the community. Jarrett says invasive plants have taken over the many parts of Nanaimo's great outdoors. During his over-the-phone interview, he could even spot several different invasives from his parked car.
I'm actually looking at quite a few. So there's, I'm looking at Queen Anne's lace, common tansy, Scotch broom.
Jarrett says while invasive species come into different communities in different ways, a new bylaw banning the sale and distribution of the plants will help.
We are managing invasive species. They are present here. They are spreading. And them being commercially available is just one source of introduction. But it, you know, the horticultural trade in general is generally where all of these new invasive species are coming from. And so, well, it won't address every single invasive species. There's kind of a set list that that we're able to regulate. It's a great start.
Along with drafting a new bylaw, the committee recommended that council direct staff to work with local garden retailers and the community to organize public awareness campaigns about native and non-invasive alternatives and how to properly dispose of invasive plant waste. Public awareness around invasive plants, Jarrett says, is another huge key in stopping the introduction of invasive plants into different ecosystems.
There's these volunteer opt-in programs where organizations, retailers, nurseries can opt in to say, hey, we're not going to sell or distribute invasive species, but they only work if those businesses actually opt in to those programs. And as somebody who's done that work and, you know, engaged with the community and have heard from many people who have talked to managers and owners of various establishments, it's clear that we're not getting enough buy-in. So this is going to be a huge piece that helps fill in that gap.
Jarrett says stores may still be selling invasive plants because they have customers wanting to buy the plants, not knowing the impacts it could have on local ecosystems.
Some nurseries, you know, there's people buying them, and so it's a product. They're going to have it available. If they're legally allowed to do it, there's money to be made, and that's kind of the end for that.
Along with plants, he also mentioned seed mixes that are also sold in stores where the seed mixes might feature seeds from invasive plants. He gives examples of foxgloves and bachelor's bun as invasives commonly found in seed mixes. Councillor Hillary Ismere originally brought up the idea for the bylaw back in March of this year.
I was participating in a lot of work parties to remove invasive plants, and I was also hearing from people, both volunteers and people who work as experts in the invasive species removal business, and they were expressing, you know, that so much time and money is being put into trying to remove invasives and fighting this at the ground level. But what's really needed is to also go upstream and to stop these invasive plants from getting into the environment in the first place.
She says many of the work parties would involve the removal of English ivy, Daphne, and Scotch broom.
So the English ivy is climbing up trees and choking them out, and the spurge laurel or Daphne is covering the ground and blocking out the sunlight and killing off our native species on the ground floor of the forest.
She says banning the sale and distribution of invasive plants is one important tool for the city to have to help slow the growth of invasives. She adds she is in favor of seeing the province step in and do a province-wide ban of the sale of the plants.
We can only do so much as a municipal government, but I do think it's important for us to lead the way and to show that we're on board by doing what we can locally, but it's always about also pressuring the province to step up and do their part, because these invasive plants don't understand municipal boundaries. And so really we need a provincial approach to these things.
James Grant is the owner of Birdie and Bee's Garden, located on Bowen Road. He thinks having a bylaw banning invasive species from plant nurseries and stores is a great idea.
It's definitely a problem that needs to be taken into consideration, and it's something that we take into consideration already in our buying. So it's not something that we bring in by and large. We try and avoid the invasive species whenever possible.
Graham says it's important for local plant sellers to watch what they are bringing into the community.
Of course, just being in the industry, there is a knowledge base that you're expected to have. It's, you know, we're introducing things into the environment, so we're aware of what's available in the marketplace and what to avoid, not just because of the BC Species Council, but from being active nature lovers, too. So,
Birdie and Bee's Garden opened in March of this year, and Graham says they made the conscious decision when they first opened to avoid buying invasive species in the first place.
That you have to make a conscious effort not to bring in, even though people are asking for them. Things that particularly come into mind, things like periwinkle, things like ivy, those are really detrimental to our environment. They escape captivity very easily. So it's a conscious decision not to bring those in and to allow them for a selection in the first place.
So while a ban wouldn't have a large impact on their store, Graham says change will be good for the industry, and plant shop owners and customers need to make more conscious decisions about the plants they buy and grow. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Once again, thank you so much to Lauren from CHLY for that news segment. And coming up next, we actually have an interview that I did recently with TransLink, more specifically their media team, and even more specifically John Jang, who is their media relations advisor. And I believe I'm getting that right. Yes, media relations advisor. And I got to speak with him about a recent collaboration that TransLink did with a local business. And I'm not going to say which local business because that gets answered in the interview, and I don't want to say too much before I play it. But I thought it was a really interesting thing to do, and I want to talk about it more after the interview plays. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this interview. TransLink, the transportation agency of Metro Vancouver, recently announced a collaboration with a local business in Port Coquitlam, BC. This local business is Patina Brewing, a brewing company that has partnered with TransLink to release a public transit-themed craft beer, aptly titled the Platform Pilsner. A novel collaboration, but one that TransLink hopes is able to inspire other unique collaborations with local businesses throughout Metro Vancouver. To learn more about why TransLink decided on this collaboration with Patina Brewing, we spoke with John Jang, TransLink's media relations advisor. When we asked why TransLink decided to go into this direction, here is what he had to say.
It's a really, really good question. So first of all, you know, TransLink as an organization, we're always trying to think of new ways, creative ways to generate a little bit of revenue that doesn't involve us having to increase the fares for customers. And with that in mind, our CPMP team, which is our corporate partnerships and program team, they essentially are tasked with coming up with creative ways to find other organizations, businesses, or opportunities to find these revenue streams. As another example, I'll mention that we introduced Amazon lockers on TransLink SkyTrain stations and transit hubs a couple of years back, again, to also realize that customers could use this as a benefit. When you're working and going to school, you want to pick up a package along the way home. It's really convenient to do it right at your SkyTrain station or transit hub. So they kind of came to us and said, hey, we have this idea of a partnership with Patina, and we think it'd be a really great way to do it. And I just immediately thought, well, that seems like an excellent idea. Let's see what we can do. And so we were able to partner with Patina and license the intellectual property for TransLink and kind of work together to create the platform Pilsner. It's, I think, the first of its kind program, not just in Canada, but possibly in North America, when you think about a transit agency doing something like this. So we were really proud of the fact that it's kind of progressive. And come on, let's be real. Metro Vancouver is known for a lot of different things, including a very strong craft beer scene.
Later on, we asked him if this collaboration opens the door for other TransLink-themed products, whether that be a TransLink sneaker or any other array of TransLink food items or specialty drinks, like the one that's seen in this collaboration with Patina Brewing.
You know what? I guess never say never. I don't know that anything is in the works for a TransLink sneaker, though that would be a pretty cool idea. Obviously, if a sneaker head is listening right now, I'm sure they'd love that. But for us, again, it's just trying to find creative ways to generate a little bit of that revenue. So the Amazon partnership with the lockers, again, being a really good example of us doing something like that. Obviously, it's not like a TransLink locker. It's still an Amazon-branded locker. Amazon is the one that provides those lockers. We just give them the space and the lease to do it. But it gives us a little bit of money where if we hadn't done that partnership, we wouldn't be getting that money. And all of that money still goes to support and fund operational services across Metro Vancouver. So, you know, I think if you've got other brilliant ideas like TransLink sneakers, TransLink snacks, food, nothing is off the table as long as it makes sense for us as an organization, for our customers, and also for the organizations that we'd be partnering with.
We then went on to ask if this project came from a desire from TransLink to diversify its revenue streams.
Yeah, I think it 100% was. Our CPMP team, you know, their task is to be creative and think outside the box and find ways to generate that revenue. But all of that is still because we need to find ways to make sure that our operating funding is strong and flush. Now, obviously, a large bulk of that still comes through partnerships and funding that we receive from government partners. And we've got many different teams that are constantly working with partners at every level of government to get that kind of funding so that we don't have to worry about, you know, reducing services or anything of that nature. Thankfully, our 2025 investment plan was secured this year, where we can feel pretty good about it over the next couple of years. But trying to find new ways to get that revenue, TransLink, again, is getting into real estate development, right? So that's another creative way that we're doing this and looking at other transit agencies around the world that have done this and looking at it and thinking that's a model that we could emulate here in Metro Vancouver. So it's basically the task of having to come up with all these different creative ways to generate a little bit of revenue. And I would say, like, there's never too little. Like, any bit that we can get through programs like the collaboration with Patina Brewing, it just goes to help everyone, whether it's us having to keep the services or the customers who depend on having those services every single day.
We then discussed whether TransLink hopes that this collaboration inspires other public transit providers to collaborate with local businesses in their communities.
Yeah, you know, I can't say with certainty that other transit agencies will exactly follow suit, but they might at least be inspired by, like, the model, like allowing transit agencies to permit the use of their intellectual property and working with local businesses. It doesn't necessarily have to be craft beer. It might not even be beer at all. It might be other products. I don't know for certain. But I do think that the transit industry is a very tight-knit community. And so what happens in Metro Vancouver with TransLink, for example, is definitely viewed and observed by transit agencies, not just across Canada, but across North America and around the world. And so we know that if there are conversations happening, maybe somebody picks up the phone or writes an email and reaches out to someone at TransLink and says, hey, like, tell us a little bit more about how you guys got into this, because we're thinking about doing it in, like, I don't know, Berlin, or maybe in some places in Hong Kong. Like, we don't know. But I hope we have had that impact with this project. We do know that it's progressive. We know that it's raised a lot of eyebrows, not just from people living in Metro Vancouver, but across the country. And I think that's what makes this such a unique story for TransLink. We didn't just do this because we wanted to get our names out there for the purpose of being like the first of its kind. We also wanted to support a local business with Patina, a great local community brewery in Port Coquitlam. And especially now during a time where obviously a lot of things are happening politically, economic uncertainty is felt by every Canadian right now. And so that also played a big role into it too. So if other organizations and other agencies want to kind of follow the TransLink model here, we hope they do so with the mindset of wanting to support their local communities as well.
Lastly, we asked Jang, what is the availability and demand looking like for the platform Pilsner?
Yeah, I mean, all good things have to come to an end. So I can at least share with you that 1,500 four-packs, or essentially 6,000 cans of the Platform Pilsner, are being produced or have been produced. After that or beyond that, I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see. If there is a really high demand, who knows, maybe there's an opportunity to sort of bring it back for a second batch, or maybe explore other opportunities with either Patina or other organizations, businesses in the region. But yeah, it's kind of a limited edition item. So I've had some friends who have reached out and been like, I bought a four pack, but I'm scared of opening it because I feel like if I open it now and I don't have any others left around, like, I'm going to miss it. And I kind of just want to keep it on the shelf. So if people want to buy it, that's great. You're not only supporting a little bit of TransLink, of course, but you're helping Patina and maybe getting to secure like a really cool collector's item down the road. I don't know. Fingers crossed that it is selling hot though. Like, we would love to hear from Patina hopefully soon and being like, we are completely sold out. For us, that would be amazing.
Okay, we are back with Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. And that was my interview with John Jang, the media relations advisor for TransLink, on their recent collaboration with Patina Brewing to come out with the Platform Pilsner. And honestly, when I first saw the article around it, I think it just crossed or passed my mind because I just didn't really think that clearly about the idea that a transit provider could collaborate with a local brewery. And in this case, they very much did do that, and that actually was what happened. It was not some late April Fool's joke or anything. That actually was the case. And I thought it was really interesting, and I wanted to reach out for the interview because it wasn't just coming out of this, like, oh, haha, we're sort of doing this novelty product here. And in some ways, it does feel like that, but I think the more interesting angle is that TransLink was coming at it from a way of diversifying its funding model. You know, I think being the LJI journalist here at CJSF, one thing I've seen a lot within the community is a lot of support for public transit, but support in the face of, you know, current budgeting issues, whether that be for increased infrastructure or the more ever-present sort of operational funding that TransLink is dealing with. I know Movement YVR is a local advocacy group that has been doing a lot of work to raise awareness around the sort of funding shortfalls of public transit in the city. And I just think this is a very unique and, yeah, somewhat innovative way of kind of wanting to increase that funding. So I guess we'll see where it goes. You know, maybe one day there will be TransLink sneakers like I had suggested in the interview, but maybe not. Maybe they are going to stick to craft beers and maybe even coffees or other things that are particularly popular in Vancouver, but it is yet to be seen. I just thought that was a very interesting and fun topic to do an interview about, so I'm glad I was able to get that done. All right. We are about 25 minutes into this hour of Speak Up. And before I do anything else, I'm going to leave you all here with a bird note. That is right, a classic CJSF 90.1 FM bird note.
This is Bird Note. Though once thought to be a subspecies of the eastern meadowlark, this bird was recognized in 2022 as a separate species, the Chihuahuan meadowlark. Keen observers have long known that the Chihuahuan meadowlark's song sounds different from other North American meadowlarks. Named after the northern region of Mexico where they're easy to find, Chihuahuan meadowlarks live in dry desert grasslands. They form a distinct population in Mexico and the southwestern U.S. They have a similar build to other meadowlarks, but with lighter brown streaks on their sides and less yellow on their bellies. And of course, a song all their own. The Chihuahuan meadowlark's recognition as a species was aided by Joanna Beam, a PhD student who studied the song patterns and DNA of North America's meadowlark populations. The research suggested that song differences could help prevent Chihuahuan meadowlarks from breeding with other species, and that eastern and western meadowlarks are more closely related to each other than they are to the Chihuahuan birds. Now, the Chihuahuan meadowlark has a name that recognizes the species' uniqueness and that pays tribute to the desert landscapes that these birds call home. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
I hope you all learned a little bit about the Chihuahuan meadowlark. But we are back now with Speak Up only on CJSF 90.1 FM. This is your host, Danny Nezvedarani, who is also the LJI community radio journalist slash reporter for the station. And I'm really glad to be here with all of you this Tuesday and to talk about this next topic of discussion, this next topic worth speaking up about. And in this case, that is a State of the City address that New Westminster Mayor Patrick Johnstone gave at the Century House in New Westminster. This is, I think, the third State of the City address that he's given this year, and, you know, it's pretty customary for mayors of the various municipalities around the Lower Mainland to provide these State of the City addresses, but I think it's interesting that he is sort of giving them and sort of tailoring them to different demographics. You know, I think he did one that was sort of for the youth of the city, and in this case, this one was very much directed towards the senior population of New Westminster. It was at the Century House. I attended in person, so I saw firsthand what the demographic was like, and that very much was the case. And it was, you know, a 30-40 minute speech with a lengthy and impassioned Q&A section at the end, so I can't play all of it for all of you, but I thought I would play one clip that I thought was particularly interesting, and it had to do with the city's communication. You know, I think a lot of the State of the City address had to do with things that he's really happy about and successes that the city has made and things that council has been doing well, because of course, you know, a lot of the speech is going to be about that. But one thing that he touched on that I would like to play for all of you is a bit about gaps and failures in communication within the city, specifically now that there is even less local news coverage than when I first